Well, welcome everyone. It's Leap Day, and my good friend Will Sweet, great song there. Everybody's got to jump, right? So welcome everyone. Thank you for joining me for this Leap Day episode of A Word with Bob Live, February 29th. Happy birthday to all of you folks who were born on Leap Day. If you're 80, you're really 40, you know, so that's a good thing. So before we get started with today's episode, we have a quick housekeeping message from our communications and marketing manager, Will Sweet. Hey, Will.
Hi, Bob. All lines have been muted upon entering our program today. Please use the Q&A feature to ask any questions you may have. This program is being recorded, and the recording will be available to view by all attendees at rbma.org/podcast after this session of A Word with Bob Live has concluded.
Will, thank you very much. You all know Will keeps me straight here on the podcast, but also yesterday, Will accompanied eight RBMA members as we were on Capitol Hill in D.C. to do some discussions with staff and members of Congress around the physician fee schedule. And Will kept us straight, took some great pictures. You'll see him on LinkedIn. Thanks a lot, Will.
Yeah, thank you, Bob. It was a pleasure to join the group, and it was a great day.
Really important, though. You know, spring training's very active. Will and I always talk about baseball. Will, I'm sitting here looking at the new Major League Baseball uniforms. What are you up? Thumbs up or thumbs down on those things?
I think they're a miss on the new uniforms. They look like, you know, a 13-year-old travel team or something. They look pretty cheap to me. So
designed to keep the players cooler, it says. You know.
Yeah, I think they need to, you know, recalibrate a little bit, go back to the drawing board.
There we go. Well, there you go, folks. Will Sweet on Major League Baseball uniforms. Thanks, Will. Appreciate your help with the podcast. A little bit of an opening announcement, folks. I hope you're registered for Paradigm. If you're not, you need to. Now's the time. So secure your spot at the premier annual conference for radiology business professionals before registration fees increase March 15th, so beware the Ides of March. Registration will go up. At Paradigm, your leap into innovation includes cutting-edge sessions presented by over 60 radiology business thought leaders, opportunities to connect with a vibrant community of your peers, and sold-out exhibit hall, and I mean sold out. So featuring the newest solutions and strategies to propel your practice forward, you can earn continuing education credits, build meaningful relationships with like-minded professionals who can offer you support, and return to your practice reinvigorated and ready to implement new strategies for success. So do it today. Do it while you're listening to Word with Bob Live. Visit rbma.org/paradigm to learn more about the conference and register yourself and your team today. We'll welcome you in Las Vegas. And we're also going to welcome my first two guests today in Las Vegas. This year at Paradigm, we're very pleased and excited for our innovation keynote on Monday, April 16th, entitled A New Era in Diagnostics, Radiology and Pathology United. I'm pleased to welcome the co-presenters of our innovation keynote to give you a special preview of the session today. Dr. Eric Walser is the John Seeley Professor and Chairman of Radiology at University of Texas Medical Branch. He was previously a professor of radiology at the Mayo Clinic, and received training in diagnostic interventional radiology at Indiana University. Go Hoosiers. He serves on the Diagnostic Medicine Focus Group for the Panel of National Pathology Leaders, and his clinical focus is artificial intelligence in diagnostics and minimally invasive therapies. Welcome, Dr. Walser. How are you today?
I'm just great. Thanks, Bob, for having us.
And he will be joined by Dr. Christopher Zahner as Clinical Pathology Director at the University of Texas Medical Branch, who is dedicated to improving clinical diagnostics through the development and application of diagnostic management teams. He leverages his experience as a NASA engineer in his ongoing research in medical device innovation. Welcome, Dr. Zahner. How are you today?
Doing great. Thank you very much.
We are really looking forward to your presentation at Paradigm. I know I've served with both of you gentlemen on the Diagnostic Medicine Focus Group, which has really been an interesting journey for me. I like to listen to you smart people. And so tell us a little bit about what you're going to be presenting at Paradigm.
Well, Bob, again, thanks for you to you and Will and Bob, RBMA for having us. This is a great opportunity
Sure.
and we're looking forward to Paradigm. We have thought about challenging the traditional role of pathologist and radiologist in an academic institution. We have been for too long two silos that don't really talk to each other. And yet, with the evolution of AI and patient care in the virtual realms, we see those silos need to be broken down, and we really are advancing the concept of a diagnostic medicine, which incorporates radiology and pathology together. So, Chris here is my buddy, and the radiology chair and the pathology chair at UTMB are attached at the hip to make this happen.
That's great. Tell me a little bit about at UTMB, how are you making this happen? And I know you all just received a large grant to help kind of foster this idea, this concept of diagnostic medicine.
Yeah, Chris. Yeah. So we did. For the next 3 years, we're going to be funded to create what we refer to as diagnostic management teams. These are multidisciplinary teams that are focused on the diagnosis of the patient. It probably sounds a little bit reductive, and maybe everybody here would agree with this philosophy, but we think that the highest leverage moment in a patient's care pathway is the moment of diagnosis, as opposed to the moment of therapy.
Oh, that's
And
interesting.
so, yeah, I mean, because everything follows from that initial domino, right? I mean, if you don't get that domino right, then you go the wrong way and things don't seem to happen quite right for the patient. And so
Including the
for us,
billing side, right? I mean,
that's exactly
that's what
right.
our,
Absolutely. Everything, the complexity of the billing, everything. And so from an administrative standpoint, if we get that moment right, then we'll bill the patient properly and we will get them out of the hospital well, much faster. And so for us, this initiative from the Seeley Smith Foundation for the Diagnostic Center, we're going to really focus on improving those diagnostic turnaround time metrics that we're going to develop and then hone through the next 3 years. So that's our real initiative, is to try to understand administratively what's the most effective for patient care and then deliver that.
That's interesting. And I know my participation with this with Bob Tessier from the pathology side is kind of like, well, how would you bill for this? And who, splits what? What's interesting to me is that you've been able to come together and not worry about that part of it first, right?
Yeah, we don't want to, we really don't make the financial aspect of it the driver. As with everything, it's going to be part of the equation, and we're going to have to think about that. But there are mechanisms through CMS and through some of the commercial payers that they will compensate you for things like interprofessional consultations and other mechanisms that pathology and radiology do quite well, that will actually bring some money to the table to support our efforts.
Yeah, and on that note, one of the things that we have had within the Department of Pathology that is now sort of being extended in this integrative approach is we've had these DMTs that are limited to pathology, areas where radiology isn't necessarily as involved. And so in that effort, we've done a number of, two or three small studies where we've shown the value at the health system level. So for example, we've done a DMT for COVID diagnostics that generated, tens of millions of dollars in additional revenue, and it was, spearheaded by three people. And so that's 20 million bucks. That's real dollars. That's not like fake money that we say, oh, we saved this. No. That was billables that we were able to generate because of this effort. And in addition, the hypothetical component was healthcare delivery was improved. We found that we compared ourselves to academic medical centers that were similar to ours, and we've saved, tens of maybe even hundreds of people in this community because of that effort. So we have the quality care improvement as well as the additional revenue. And so we think that we take that model and we now expand it to include radiology, and the two of us will address almost every area of the hospital. I mean, radiology touches a lot of areas that pathology really has no business touching. And that will make those two will be extremely powerful.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I mean, better outcomes, right? Bringing value to the bottom line. You see this ultimately, and I know our diagnostic medicine focus group has talked about this, is is starting kind of an academic setting, but moving out into community medicine. Do you see that happening over time?
Yeah, I think you will. We see that this is a very fluid patient population now, the young people, and they have a problem, joint pain, hurt their neck, skiing. They can come to an outpatient imaging center, whatever you want to call it, a diagnostic center, and we can have nurse practitioners, we can have our nurses see that patient, we can get the imaging, we can get the labs, and we can give them a diagnostic report, and then they can go see their specialist, rather than the other way around. So,
Okay, yeah,
and we
right.
think we short circuit a lot of the diagnostic work because we put it right up front,
Right,
in front of the patient. So there's obviously some problems with that. You're going to encounter some resistance, but
right.
we have with the Seeley Smith Foundation, we have people that are really interested in looking at this cutting edge technology and funding it, and that's what's really important,
Yeah, it's interesting on the policy side. There are some states where there's been some bills introduced just this year that would preclude a health system or a healthcare provider from providing a report earlier than 48 hours after a test. So it kind of counters what we're talking about, and I'm wondering how this research may help delay that kind of thought. It's kind of interesting. It's backwards.
That's a great question. I mean, all of us have an EMR where the patient sees the biopsy report the same time we do, right? And
Yeah,
that's
right.
some issues, right? It's
Yeah.
created some issues, but that's what the public demands. And I
Yeah.
don't care what the commercial payers or CMS says, the patients are going to get what they want. And we want to be in the forefront of that.
Well, and I presume this is perhaps a very good application for some type of artificial intelligence at some point, right? I mean, you're working with that too, Chris.
Part of our collaboration between Chris and I and our departments is to create a layer between us, which is primarily artificial intelligence. How do we use AI to make the diagnostic yield better and faster? And we also roll a lot of our funding into that because we don't really want to buy our AI. We want to use our own data to create our own
Right.
to fuel the diagnostic center. So yeah, that's a very important component. And it goes right between us. We both
Yeah.
manage. That's right.
Well, one of the things I try to do with our national conference is to challenge our members to think differently, and I think both of you will do that. And that's what's been exciting to me to be involved with this whole movement. Yeah.
We're happy to be a part of it. Thanks,
Yeah, we
Mark.
are. That's
Absolutely.
great. Well, thank you both for taking the time today to give us a little taste of what you're going to be presenting. And I'm sure you'll enjoy being with us, and we'll enjoy having you, and have a good crowd for you out in Las Vegas.
Thank you, Bob. Looking
Thank
forward
you
to it.
very much. Good to see you both. We'll see you in
Good to see you.
about 6 weeks. Take care. That was very interesting. And again, register for Paradigm. This is a way to challenge you all to think a little bit differently about how we deliver fine radiology services to the patient. And I think this whole area of diagnostic medicine, the focus group, Dr. Geraldine McGinty, who's the past chair of the ACR, Dr. Nick Bryant, past chair of radiology at the University of Pennsylvania, a lot of really big thinkers are involved with this. So it's been very, very interesting. And I would hope you all attend Paradigm and learn something new, and learn about how we're trying to deliver better care, better value to the patient. That's what it's all about. So I appreciate it. So folks, our next guest and my primary guest today is Michael Young. Mike is president and CEO of Temple University Health System in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Mike has been successful wherever he has stopped along his management career, and which includes Erie County Medical Center in Buffalo, New York, Grady Memorial in Atlanta, and where I met Mike as a young practice administrator, Lancaster General Hospital in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Mike and I go way back. And Mike, welcome to A Word with Bob Live. Thank you for joining me.
Bob, it's nice to be here. Thank you.
So, folks, I got to tell this story. Mike had an open door in his office, and Bob would walk through that door quite often, right, Mike? Well, and one of the things I need to say about Mike, I would go to national meetings, Mike, and people would complain about their hospital administrators, this, that, and the other thing. But Mike Young knew radiology because when you were a vice president in operations, radiology was part of your gig, right, Mike?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So I'm Mike, radiology reporting me today as the system CEO. That's how important I think imaging is. The last discussion on joint care driven by pathology and radiology is I think a great idea. And we were talking about that the other day, where the collaboration, the primary care doctor often doesn't know what to order.
Right.
And doesn't know the detailed specialized care. So combining those two can be very helpful. We have a large cancer center here called Fox Chase, and we're going to develop primary care for post-life after cancer services from a primary care basis.
Right.
The average primary care doctor doesn't understand the outcome of seed implants or chemo or radiation. Right. So specially trained physicians will do that, and then we'll pass the curriculum on to the rest of our primary care doctors. So we think this coordination of care is critically important, and I'm glad they're moving it along.
Yeah, it's been a very, as I said, very interesting to be involved with this group. We've got folks from Hopkins and Penn and, you know, all over the country, and they're just very excited about this. So we'll see how this goes, you know, and see if we can get it out in the community organizations and break down some of those barriers. So it's just not radiology and pathology in the basement, so to speak, right? Yeah. So I just wanted to tell you that Mike Young knows how to run a hospital. And he knows because, as you can see there, Mike might actually know how to get down to the Department of Radiology. And I think that's important, Mike. I mean, I know some administrators, not so much, but you are always very hands-on in that respect. And appreciated that.
Well, I have a good young staff, and I try to explain to them it's critically important to understand and be able to implement a long-range plan. But you also have to be able to work at the 1 foot level. So the really strong executive leadership in healthcare can do both the 100,000 foot review as well as the one. They understand what happens if you do this.
Sure, sure. I recall you speaking to the Lancaster Chamber many years ago at Willow Valley down there at the conference center about healthcare systems at the time. I think we were just coming out of the Clinton administration, maybe. But at that time, you talked about that we probably need some type of universal health care. I was wondering what your view is of that today, many years later, after Obamacare and other things. How are you looking at that now?
Well, let me preface my answer by saying I've been a CEO for 38 years. CEOs are generally very, very, very conservative.
Right.
I have two MBAs. I've been the executive vice president of the Pennsylvania Chamber. So that should get, and I live in Lancaster, yeah. Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
So that should tell you my starting position. I think at the end of all of this, within the next 10 years, I think we will see a government-driven health plan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Whether that be Medicare or managed Medicare. You know, I was talking to the president of Highmark Pittsburgh yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So he runs both the health plan,
right,
and the hospitals. He's got 50 UR people at the plan. He's got 50 UR people at the hospital. They all report them. What the hell do they do all day? Argue with right. each other, right? So
right.
when you look at the cost of no value added, and very similar to pathology and radiology working together.
Yeah.
So instead of clicking clicks or sending bills, you're actually paid for the value you add. And I think it's affordable. If you look at, you know, I pay $158 million a year for Blue Cross coverage.
Right, right. Yeah, 10,000 employees, right? Yeah.
Yes, if I sent it to the government, and they covered all my employees, I wouldn't need 150 people in my billing department.
Right.
And right. the plans wouldn't need 150 on their side. You wouldn't have these different denial, pre-op, and all those challenges. and all those dollars can be spent towards care.
Right.
And I think we're going to go there because I think, you know, most of the health systems are struggling. You know, practice groups are getting bigger, but if you're an old timer like us, we remember when the orthopedic and chemotherapy aggregators went down.
Right.
The aggregators aren't doing very well. And the government's really focusing on antitrust.
Right.
They just went after United yesterday. So
yeah, we were just reading, we were quietly watching that United situation yesterday. They're really looking at that closely.
So the things that you normally do to maintain market share and maintain payment models, I don't think it's going to be viable in the long term. Under single, and listening to Highmark yesterday, I went up to the president afterward. I said, "Man, you almost sound like a public hospital. I'm so impressed for what you're doing.
Yeah,
we can actually get back to taking care of patients again."
Right. Right. It's interesting to me, Mike, to see this progression, because I've been saying for years, it's a little bit like Prohibition 100 years ago. When big business got behind Prohibition, there was Prohibition, right? And I've been saying that about healthcare. When big business decides they're done insuring everybody, we're going to have some kind of single system. Is that, are you kind of saying the same thing, right?
Absolutely. Their rates are still, Highmark showed some numbers yesterday. This last calendar year, rates are up the highest in 10 years.
Yeah, right.
Now, some of that's post-COVID catch-up.
Yeah.
We can't afford this anymore. Interest rates are high. We're already struggling. What are the options? And if, the government says, we'll pick up your health care and, you need to have a minimum plan, that could be a good thing for everybody.
Do you think... I mean, there's a lot of conversation I'm involved in with, the government can't do this. Look at Medicare. And I'm like, well, we all make money off of Medicare, but it's battling those rates. That's the political battle. Do you think that can happen? I mean, it seems like putting it in ultimately in the hands of members of Congress is kind of a risky thing to do.
But you are now.
Yeah.
What really is your commercial volume? If you take out your Medicare and Medicaid, I mean, I'm 86% Medicare and Medicaid.
Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously I'm the far extreme, but over time people are in the ACA,
right.
and we're seeing commercial payers, decline year after year. It won't be too many years till it doesn't matter anyway.
Right.
So that the government has you anyway.
We're kind of at a tipping point, right? I mean,
we're getting very close. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I look at where you live and where I live, Medicare, Medicaid. We have actually a couple prisons in Schuylkill County. You got teachers, you got local government. Everybody's insured by the government, right? I mean, that's basically what I'm saying, huh?
Yes.
Same way in Lancaster County.
It's not that big a step, and I just think it hasn't been successful because if you said previously, I'm here from the government, I'm here to help.
Right.
Makes everybody nervous. But when we talk about employers are going to pay the same next year as they did this year, then you're going to see this thing quickly change.
Yeah. So let's kind of switch gears, talk a little bit about radiology. You obviously... I've always said you had the vision to help radiologists make money, be successful. Do you think we're still there with that, or is this changing? And I know there's a lot of pressures in radiology with private equity and other, consolidators, et cetera.
I still play golf with radiologists every weekend. So I guess I must be treating them fairly.
Are they retired or are they active?
Both.
Okay.
If you go back to the early 90s,
yeah,
out of California, everybody was going to be in risk and we were going to need 25% fewer doctors.
Yeah.
Remember those discussions?
Yeah, oh, I do. Everybody's looking around the table.
And I remember somebody going into a group of specialists, I'm going to bring you to your knees. I don't know if you put that knee. I was. So now it's, gee, I can't find any radiologists. I'm busy as hell. We've seen groups here in Philadelphia implode. We've seen payment rates go up 20% in the last 6 months. And 3 years ago, it's, oh my God, AI is going to get rid of all the radiologists.
Right.
Now it's, I hope we can get AI gone so I can get all my films read.
Right, right.
So I think technology is going to help us cover the shortfall of doctors, radiologists, particularly as they retire. And I think it'll be done in a coordinated way, driven by the radiologists instead of to the radiologists.
Right.
So we use AI. You know, we're the largest lung transplant center in the country. Uh-huh. So we do a gazillion chest CTs, and we have AI that reads it better than a human.
Oh, you do? You've employed those.
They can see tiny nodules that a human can't differentiate.
Uh-huh.
And then when they look at the serial CT down the road, they can see minute changes. So that and mammo, and it's hard to get body imagers anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So we think some of the technology will actually be complementary for and assisting radiology groups.
Sure. Do you, especially in community hospitals, do you see the same type of exclusive arrangements that we had and still have and would open up and shut every once in a while for somebody, but do you still see that as being the basis going forward, or is that going to change?
2 years ago, I would have told you I thought that model was going to continue.
Yeah.
But I think the lever this side is going to be the radiologist who used to have 24 radiologists to cover the service now have 12 and they can't do it anymore.
Yeah. Right.
They can't meet it. So, you know, there was a large group here in Philadelphia that recently imploded.
Mm-hmm.
So if they had exclusive range, they would not have been able to serve them.
Right.
So unlike anesthesia, where I think the change is coming from the hospital side, I think the change this time is going to be coming from the radiologist side.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you see the move to consolidate, get larger, bigger scope, which maybe is brought on by private equity, these big national, do you see that as continue to emerge throughout the country, or do you see that it depends on where you are kind of a thing?
I think it depends on first where you are, B, I think integration and growth, size growth will happen just because of coverage needs, these demand needs, the cost of home reading stations. You know, if you have 50 guys at 50 grand a pop, it gets pretty expensive.
Yeah.
And then the software upgrades and you need to replace them in 2 years.
Right.
So the need to have scale will happen. And then just the ability to cover at night and the malpractice world, I think that the drive will be to grow, to cover all those various needs. On the private equity side, you know, as I said, this is the second iteration for you and me.
Yes. Oh, it is. Yes.
It didn't work out very well last time. Some guys did okay. The guys who took cash, invested it, and didn't squander it, did okay. The people who took equity or spent the money got hammered when they had to buy themselves back out of non-compete. So the ability to raise prices, particularly in radiology, because somebody will wire the images elsewhere and they'll be read in Chicago. We've seen it here in GI. We've seen it here in oncology, medical oncology.
Uh-huh.
Long term, there just hasn't been enough revenue increase to cover the private equity cost demands.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And of course, we're a big tent organization. We have, you know, small radiology practice, large one, different kind, and private equity organizations belong to RBMA. And it's just been interesting to see that evolution over the years. As you said, this is our second iteration, right?
Mm-hmm.
We all saw the orthopods do it, and they do it and got out. And I, my sense was a lot of those organisms, people learned how to make it successful and will continue to. And some of that scale is really what's needed too, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. Are your radiologists all on staff, employed? I know there's a lot of conversation continues around, well, radiologists don't want to be hospital employees. How do you see that going with hospitals? Because go ahead.
3 years ago, my radiologists were 100% practice plan.
Mm-hmm.
So prior to my arrival, the practice plan belonged to the university.
Mm-hmm.
And universities aren't necessarily very good at running practice plans.
Right.
So with everybody's consent, we moved the practice plan over to the health system about 3 years ago. Everyone's pay is up and the growth has been pretty dramatic. So they're pretty happy with it. As we've brought in smaller community hospitals, they tend to have existing radiology relationships. And for a year or two until their contract expires, our practice plan and us allow them to operate there. And then over time, the goal is to move them into the practice plan.
Yeah.
So our practice plan has grown about 25% in headcount. Our revenue's grown, compounded over 10% a year the last 5 years.
Yeah.
We combined the two practice plans, the one at the Cancer Center and here, into one. So we like the practice plan model. They have their own board, quasi self-directed, but at the same time, I can help them set priorities.
Right. Okay. Where do you see, you were always good at finding the value in emerging radiology technologies, and you and the radiologists could figure out what machine we need to buy and get it done. Where do you see that going over the next 3 or 4 years with technology?
Yeah, we're actually pretty excited about it. For example, we recently put a linear accelerated CT in.
Oh, you did? Oh, wow.
A Varian product.
Yeah.
And the care is so much better and so much faster.
Yeah.
And seeing the changes in real time versus 4 weeks down the road.
Sure.
It's really been remarkable for us.
Yeah.
So you know me, I'm always a little skeptical. We talk to some people and we have some clinical trials coming out, patients that went that route versus the old linear accelerator and separate CT scans. So it'll be interesting to see in another 2 or 3 months what the clinical outcomes are.
Sure.
So we carefully look at technology. We bought all of our medical students little handheld ultrasounds 3 years ago.
Oh, you did?
Uh-huh. And we thought that was a great idea, and it's turned out to be a nothing burger, to be honest. Kind of a headache. Where are we going to store these images? Do we have to store them, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, we have to read them and all that stuff, right? Yeah.
As an academic center, we're still looking for the best technology available. We just want to make sure it adds value. So, I think radonc MR is next.
Uh-huh.
The downside is it's very big.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So you need a lot of space and it's very expensive. I'd like to see a couple more places do that before our cancer center does, just because the footprint is so big. So we think good technology is coming out. AI on every piece of equipment that tells you, you should image from this angle.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I agree with you and always have that you maybe don't want to march in the, you want to be in the parade, but maybe not in the front row kind of a thing, of course, the one I always remember is the MR in the neurosurgical suite that somebody had to have, and they got it, never used it, right?
There's a lot of those around the country, so you have to be prudent. I think hybrid ORs is another example. Oh yeah, we're going to do all these open hearts and all these CAS, and the answer is they're all sitting empty.
Yeah. Do you I presume the pressures, the medical staff pressures that we, you and I talked about and experienced 25, 30 years ago are kind of still the same. I mean, the cardiologists want to do everything the interventional radiologists are doing, or the vascular. I mean, is that still there, or is there some piece, or,
I would say if the old days when you and I were in private practice, that was 100, I think in the practice plan world, it's a 40 or 50.
Okay. Yeah.
Because there's a lot less downside risk, and they're more interested in doing cutting edge research or cutting edge teaching. So they're not so much, I didn't say it was zero.
Yeah. Right.
It's not so much fighting for the revenue dollars. That said, it still does happen. And why are we using the IR room for this?
Yeah.
Because in Pennsylvania, they just, if you put a replacement IR room and it has to meet OR standards, sterile corridors. So the machine's $1.4 million, $1.6 million, and the construction's $5 million.
Right. Right.
So you have four you have to replace. You're talking $20 million with really no upgrade. So we asked the question, is there a better way to do this? Is there a different way to do it? So there's some of that pressure. No, that's my work. No, that's my work.
Yeah.
It's not so much in the academic world.
Yeah. Well, and there's a growing, not split. Split's a kind of a negative word, but, IR is developing as kind of its own subspecialty in the radiology world. Have you seen a lot of pressures? There's a lot of conversation. RBMA sponsors webinars and seminars on developing your own outpatient-based labs. How do you see that going forward? Because there's always pressure there. We didn't do it at Lancaster General, but seems to be a lot of pressure.
We've had the discussion here because my chair is an IR doctor. So,
okay.
Of course, every meeting starts with IR.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're beginning to, not beginning, we're tracking with some zeal, monthly, the types of IR work to see, is there enough to support an exclusive outpatient program?
Mm-hmm.
And then two, what are the safety parameters around it? How do you know which patients are going to be the ones at risk?
Yes.
And we're having that discussion because the malpractice venue here in Philly is pretty bad. And you talk about that, even in ambulatory surgery, how do you know when a patient is high risk? Or you ought to know that the patient.
Yes.
So regardless, we're not going to do the surgery there. We're going to do them in a hospital based. So in case you happen to nick the aorta, there is somebody there to help you seal it up.
Yes, right. Well, and I know I've seen that around the country. You hire a special IR person and, the first patient, there's a bad experience and that kind of kills the program. And I'm sure as a hospital president, you don't want to see that happen.
You saw that a couple of weeks ago with a for-profit hospital in the Northeast. It's all over. Patient had a ruptured uterus at a for-profit hospital, and the hospital didn't have the coil to do the embolization because the company took them back. So till she was transferred to another hospital, she bled out.
Yeah.
So if you do that on an ambulatory site,
until
you get her someplace, is that risk? And it's really identifying who's high risk and who's not.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Mike, let's switch a little bit, maybe back to finance. We in the physician world, with a Medicare physician fee schedule, there's no annual inflationary factor built in, but there is with hospitals. And, that's part of the big discussion, had it again yesterday down on Capitol Hill with members of Congress. Those of us in the physician world say, you hospitals are crying the blues, but you get an inflationary factor every year. And I kind of wonder about that, where you stand on that, because you own a bunch of physicians too, and how do you balance that out? And I drive around the country and there's new hospitals being built everywhere. I mean, it seems like there's right here in Schuylkill County, St. Luke's and Geisinger build a new one together, 150 beds and, boom. So I'm like, hospitals doing that bad, So it's kind of interesting.
Well, there's six hospitals for sale here in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
that no one's going to buy.
Yeah.
Because you could take the richest entity in the marketplace, and even they couldn't afford to turn around. So yeah. I think it's really dependent up where you live. Is the fastest growing part of Pennsylvania,
right?
Proximity to New York and to Philly, it's about half between. So yeah. It's growing from both directions. So this week they reported all the hospital earnings. So instead of losing $100 million through 6 months, I only lost $70 million.
Oh, there you go. You made $30 million bucks,
so,
right?
So there, a $30 million improvement. Yeah. Even CHOP lost money in 6 months. So I think where there's lots of commercial pay and lots of growth, Texas, Florida, where you are, you're going to see hospitals grow. But with the increase in drugs, labor costs, particularly nursing, and you know, the hardest nurse to get is an IR nurse.
Right.
You know, it's not an ICU nurse anymore. It's an IR nurse.
Right.
So the average hospital is struggling. So, yeah, we get a small increase, 0.7, 0.8,
right.
But our drugs are up 22.
Okay, yeah. And everybody wants that drug, right? I mean, you know, whatever it is, huh?
And trust me, CMS has gotten just as smart as we have been. And so our largest chemo drug, they just dropped, sent out a memo. Here's the new price for the drug, and it's down 50%.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So that's like, yeah, our revenue's down $18 million. Oh, well, that's from one drug.
Sure. Well, and again, that goes back. So that kind of leads us back around to what we first started talking about. At some point, everybody says, hey, we can't run it anymore, right? I mean, especially the rural hospitals.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know how the rural hospitals do it. Most states have this hospital tax model.
Right.
And Pennsylvania's one, and Georgia finally put one in when I was there. And we were having that discussion. And I think the states or the hospital association or both, depending upon who's controlling the dollars, really have to support these rural hospitals. And I think the advent of telemedicine, particularly teleradiology, my radiologist can read Wellsboro, Pennsylvania's which is 4 hours away in the middle of nowhere. You can do rural OB where the prenatal visits, half of them are actually telehealth. So I think technology is going to help, but in the interim we have to keep them alive, because when you can't do a massive bleed with telehealth,
right?
You can't start TPA for a heart attack or stroke care without telemed. So I think you're going to need the rural hospital. I think technology can help address some of the shortfalls, but the current payment model has to change. They have an experimental model here in Pennsylvania where we're in year 4, 5, or 6 of kind of the old Hill-Burton type of payment.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Right.
Let's say your costs were $30 million 5 years ago. The state's been paying you $30
million. Uh-huh.
So it'll be interesting to see how that works out.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I can't say that Pennsylvania, the rural, and I live in a pretty rural area, they haven't been hurt. I mean, a lot of the consolidation has probably helped healthcare here. Mm-hmm. You know, I could say that as a person that lives here. But I'm an hour to any place I want to be, basically. And but for the people that live in Schuylkill County, Pennsylvania, I would say some of the consolidation has clearly helped our health care up here.
You know, yes.
It's interesting. And to see the systems converge in one area and try to work together, that's kind of interesting. So I want to talk a little bit about physician training. I have a daughter that went through it. She's a pediatrician, had a really good training, University of Maryland, and her residency at Columbia Presbyterian. But we've been challenged in radiology. Right now, on the American College of Radiology Career Center, there's like 3,000 positions listed. And they're graduating from training programs like 1,000 a year. So it's just the math doesn't work. what, I mean, you run a big training, you run a medical college and training programs. What do you see as the future? Because it can't all be physician assistants and nurse practitioners. That's, I don't think it's going to be the panacea that everybody thinks it is.
No, I think, you know, the presentation before mine about the diagnostic cooperation between anatomy, A&P, pathology, and radiology working together, I think will create efficiencies. And I think the AI technology will create some efficiencies, but we've expanded our IR program because of the demand. We've expanded our anesthesia program because of demand. And we've slowed some down. ENT, for example, there's plenty of ENTs out there. So I think most of us in the academic world around the country are pretty responsive to expanding where necessary and contracting where necessary. So more medical, there are more medical schools online now, but the problem is there aren't more residency slots.
Yes, that's where, expanding the slots seems to me to be a good effort, but
it takes a long time.
Yeah.
Most health systems are struggling, so they don't want to expand a slot. They don't want to expand a program without the slot because they don't get paid. And then the graduate moves to where you live and that doesn't do me any good. So I think we're nimble, not like a deer, but not as bad as a turtle.
There's
somewhere in between to trying to meet demand. I mean, if you go back 2 years ago, when PE took over the ER world and cut pay, and there were, you know, social postings, pay is down. Well, the number of people who went into ED medicine dropped like a brick. That's what ED volumes are up 15% around the country. We need more, not less. So the training programs have filled back up, and will produce more again. So I think some of these issues are short term. Some will produce results ourselves. And some hopefully we can fix with technology.
I like I do with most things, I tend to oversimplify it. But I mean, if a slot for radiology is approximately, I've heard the number $75,000 per year over 4 or 5 years, it seems like you could find funding out of this industry to fund some slots, but it's harder than that, you know. But it seems like we could come together in certain training programs to fund slots. There seems to be, I think it's there's enough money there to do it, but it's apparently there's problems with that with the government.
Well, no, I think it's my counterparts, who many of them are squirrels and don't want to take a risk. It's like, oh my God, I'll add three slots and it'll cost me $350,000 and somebody will find out and I'll lose my job. You know, many of my counterparts are making big money. When you make big money, your job is to keep your job. So I'm not hammering everybody. There is creativity out there, but there's also a lot of a fair amount of caution.
I understand that. So you've had a varied career, been successful wherever you've been, and turned around a lot of places, very interesting places. What do you, couple of factors attribute that to?
I learned at UPMC, before it was UPMC, if you have strong nursing, strong radiology, and strong pathology, even the most inept hospital CEO can be successful.
There you go.
And I'm not saying that because I'm on this podcast.
And
we followed that model at Lancaster. And when everybody closed their nursing school, we flipped our diploma school to a freestanding college. And Penn just recently handed it to St. Joe's. But I got all of my counterparts. And so from 1990 to, you know, 2020, Lancaster doesn't have a nurse shortage.
Right.
because it's been cranking out 250.
Right.
You know, residency program was expanded to 42 or 44, so there's no shortage of primary care.
Right.
So I learned if you make sure you think long, make those three areas strong, you mm-hmm. think in 10-year increments.
Right.
Is this decision going to hold up in year 6 and 7, or is it just going to get me through 18 months? So if you think long term, and then most failing places have bad radiology relationships.
Yeah.
Most of them have bad pathology. And so the surgeons have left because they've been burned. Nursing isn't responsive, so patient satisfaction is low. And generally, you know, we were talking about the 100,000 foot and the 1 foot. I went to a hospital where their open heart numbers tripled.
Mm-hmm.
This is generally a good thing. So how comes our open hearts tripled? Well, your predecessor went to a per diem rate.
Okay. All right.
So the average length of stay is 5 days.
Yeah.
And you did the per diem, and it was about an 80% discount.
Wow. Uh-huh.
So the insurer was saying, let's move all these cases. So it was great on volume, but it cost them about $4 million.
Yeah.
So we went back to the plan and said, guess what? Here's what you're going to pay. And our number dropped by 40%.
Sure.
But net cash, we made way more money.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I it's hard running a health system or a hospital. There aren't many folks that have the financial understanding and the clinical understanding and just the straight up operating. So I see a dearth of really strong 50 to 60 year olds, the next group behind me.
Yeah, good. Well, that's good. And I know if anybody works under your mentorship, they've been successful, right, Mike? I mean, we've seen them. Yeah, they've learned a lot. They've gone on
to be CEOs elsewhere and be successful elsewhere. Yeah. And fortunately, I have a great young team. The CEO of the acute care hospitals is 44.
Yeah.
The CEO of the practice plan is 41.
Yeah, there you go.
We've spent the last 5 years bringing them along.
So when people talk to me about my career, one of the things I'm most proud of is when we started, we developed the MRI group, as you remember, and it's still that partnership.
It's still there. Exists. I see the billboard on Route 30 when I come down.
It still exists. So folks, and the history of that goes back to Certificate of Need, when I discovered one day in Harrisburg that Mike's guys didn't get a Certificate of Need for MRI services, but we made it work, didn't we? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm real proud of that, to see that the Lancaster General and the Lancaster Radiology Associates have kept that going.
You know, maybe I'll add, and I'll make it my final point, unless you have another question.
No.
You talked about this angst that often exists, and my belief was, you know, when you work like this, so we needed an MR, we couldn't get one.
Right.
So the doctors and the health system figured out how to do it. And at Lancaster General, you know, the care was superb. The doctors did very well. The hospital did well. The outcomes were great,
mm-hmm.
because 9 out of 10 times we worked like this. I went to Grady, where Emory was the practice plan, and they had their own hospitals, and Grady was kind of the MA place. And believe it or not, I took the secret Lancaster General quality model and implemented it at Grady, and Emory was glad to do it. And we started working like this, and outcomes of both Emory and Grady vastly improved, and both places have been solid ever since. So I could never understand why you'd want to fight with your physicians, particularly your hospital-based physicians. I think that model exists today, and it's still successful today.
Yeah, it's a very simple model, and you're right. You work together and everybody goes home happy, right? Yeah. Well, Mike, we don't talk often, but I follow you on LinkedIn. I see what you're doing, and it's successful, and I appreciate your friendship and advice through the years. We've both done okay.
Yeah, I'm glad to share today. It's good to see you. And God bless the radiologists. We need them.
There you go. We will end with that. Mike Young, President and CEO of Temple Health. And Mike, let's stay in touch.
Thank you very much. We'll get out
on the golf course.
Yes, hopefully.
All right. Take care. Thank you, Mike Young. Appreciate it. So, folks, a couple of just closing words. Don't miss our upcoming AI webinar series, Frontiers of Radiology, Navigating AI's Role in Radiology Management. This is a very comprehensive three-part series providing a deep dive into the intersection of artificial intelligence and radiology business management. There you see my brain spinning on the screen. This series showcases the transformative potential of AI in reshaping the landscape of radiology services, focusing on implementation, impact on patient satisfaction, and ways to enhance operational efficiency. It all starts next week on March the 5th. So register today, rbma.org/webinars, all caps, to register. And I want to remind everybody, you still have time to enter your products, service lines, initiatives, or campaigns recognized with RBMA's prestigious RAD Honors Awards. We've extended the submission deadline to March the 6th, where we're going to honor radiology practices and vendors that have demonstrated the highest degrees of creativity, innovation, and exemplary leadership. Winners will be awarded in front of a crowd of your peers and industry leaders at RBMA 2024 at Paradigm this April in fabulous Las Vegas. So learn more and submit your entry at rbma.org/rad_honors. And show off your stuff, folks. Win an award. That'll be great. So also join our upcoming Radiology Today webinar on March the 7th to explore trends and forecasts in radiology business. This new quarterly series curated by the RBMA Vendor Committee is your pathway to discovering emerging radiology business trends. This installment promises an engaging lineup of experts tackling a variety of critical topics, including innovative wellness, those types of innovative wellness initiatives to combat burnout, mastering denial management, and leveraging data analytics to improve patient follow-up processes. So visit rbma.org/calendar to register for all these wonderful programmings. Is it spring yet? Not so much here. Today's a beautiful, chilly end of leap day, I should say. So join our upcoming Spring Forward coding series starting in May to enhance your coding acumen and sharpen your skill set. Sessions will focus on diagnostic neurointerventional coding, mastering advanced cases with confidence, dialysis circuit interventions, mastering embolization procedure coding, and more. Getting equipped with up-to-date knowledge from leading coding experts in radiology, visit rbma.org/coding to learn more and register. Folks, leap day. Again, happy birthday to all those that were born on February 29th, and we'll wish you again a happy birthday in four more years. Thanks for attending today's program. Thanks to Mike Young. Thanks to Dr. Eric Walser and Dr. Christopher Zahner. Register for Paradigm. Get your whole team registered while you're at it. Don't forget our group registration offer. You'll get $100 per person discount on registration for groups of five or more. Have non-members in your team. Everyone qualifies for member group pricing as long as one registrant is current RBM member. So please register for Paradigm and bring along the gang. So mark your calendars. Our next Word with Bob Live will be March the 28th. I've got a very special guest that day, a lot of marketing focus we're going to chat about. So thank you for watching and listening. Have a great day. See you next time. Register. See you in Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas, folks. Happy leap day.
Bright light city, gonna set my soul, gonna set my soul on fire. Got a whole lot of money that's ready to burn, so get those stakes up higher. There's a thousand pretty women waiting out there. They're all living, the devil may care. And I'm just a devil with love to spare. So Viva